You're listening to Around Comics, episode 182, Emerald City Comic-Con Special. Seattle, Washington, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. Normally, Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago, but this week we're coming to you from Seattle and the Emerald City Comic-Con. You can find more about the Comic-Con by visiting EmeraldCityComicCon.com.
It's too late now if you're not here.
Forget it.
You're going to be in a big line.
And this episode of Around Comics is
Ethan
brought to you...
Ethan Van Sciver has already closed his commission list.
Yeah, it's done. No, we don't know that for sure.
We don't know that.
This episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering the Invincible Iron Man Omnibus at an amazing 37% off the cover price. Pick up the earliest adventures of everyone's favorite Ironclad Avenger for only $62.99. You can pick from any of the three variant covers, and remember, all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. Hi, guys.
Hey,
what's
how's
up?
Going?
Hey, this.
I'm back.
I know. On top of this being a convention special, this is our reunion tour. Brian Salazar is back with
hello.
Us.
This is Cher's like reunion tour where every 4 months we're gonna get back together. And really just suck all of our fans like energy out.
I refuse to wear the crotchless panties though.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> No one asked you to. Yeah. Refuse anything.
Well,
as long as it comes with bourbon, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, well, enough bourbon, and you never know what's going to happen. First, before we jump into stuff here, I definitely want to thank Jim DeMonacus and all the staff at Emerald City Con, and Chris Chavez for sending us the plug button there. Seattle impressions from the first day.
I love it. Seattle's awesome city. This is the first time here. It's beautiful, clean,
people are strong,
fresh,
beautiful,
fast. Lots of trees. There's hills.
I think like every weekend they have a half marathon where they force kids in Seattle to run around downtown.
Grow them strong.
From what I know.
But it was a blast. We had a great time yesterday just checking out the city. Went to the fish market. They throw fish.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sell patchouli oil and
everything.
We went to a baseball game and we had fresh roasted peanuts.
They were outstanding.
We got into a fight with someone outside.
Mariners fan. I had a slap.
Yeah. What were they doing at their home ballpark?
Hey.
Bailed out. We had time to hit up some bars. So, note to anyone who's coming to Seattle, there's a bar called Linda's that's always recommended. If your ID in any way isn't exactly what it is in the book, they won't let you in even if you're 29 years old.
Even if you try.
And an accountant.
I have a job.
if you show up with... If you show up with... several 30-year-old men.
Yeah,
and you don't look in any way under 21.
You're balding.
And the man says, listen, I'm looking at your ID. I believe you.
Yeah.
You I understand that you are a 29-year-old accountant in a half-zip sweater.
Oh, well, that one was a full-zip cardigan yesterday.
Well, okay,
what
even
underage kid wears a sweater
no
like that?
No one does. And he's looking at you and he goes, I'm still not letting
it's,
you.
It's the law, man. It's the law.
What underage kid is balding... sad,
sagging,
beaten down
sagging,
by life,
not
worn
as
down by life.
No kid can drink like that.
That's
for
sure. I hope
no, that takes
well,
years.
From Wisconsin,
of practice.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
that's how we grow.
Hey, folks, you should know that voice, by the way. This is, in fact, Josh from iFanboy. Josh, how you doing?
I'm hijacking your show.
Yes, actually, we needed the mic check. Oh, okay.
That's right. We forgot that.
And there's Connor ringing the bell. So and oh, Tom Caters. I don't think I introduced you. So
sorry.
And if you were at the con, you had the opportunity to pick up a con program. You'll get to see the wonderful representation of the iFanboy crew on the back of the
pop art visage.
Oh,
I heard photorealistic.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's traced.
I'm happy with my image. I'm fine with it.
I thought Connor's was the best.
Connor's is a little sad.
So was Connor.
Ooh, look what happened to me.
Well, I tell you what, you know, we pride ourselves on not being just an entertaining show, but an edutaining show. Oh, yeah. And since we're coming to you from Seattle, I did some prep work, some research, and we have some fascinating facts on the city of Seattle. Stay away from the bell.
You mentioned one business, though.
Yeah. Did you know that there's Starbucks in Seattle?
What?
Seattle, the Seattle area has been inhabited for over 4,000 years.
Wow.
And it's rained for 3,998 of those.
What does that mean, though? Like, are there other areas that haven't been inhabited?
Tyrannosaurus.
In the Mojave Desert, for example.
Population for over 4,000 years. But the first European settlement was in 1851. The city has an approximate population of 600,000 in the city proper, but 4 million in the metro area. Nicknames of Seattle include the Queen City, Jet City, Rain City, the Gateway to Alaska, and the current official name, the Emerald City.
Queen City?
Isn't it bad for your city's self-esteem to be the gateway to another place?
The gateway.
I grew up on your way to Alaska.
I grew up around St. Louis, so I know all about that.
When did Freddie Mercury dub this Queen City?
Is it not in King County though?
That is true. Yeah, planted the Queen flag.
So there are a lot of smart people here. Seattle is the most educated city in the country, with almost 50% of the residents over the age of 25 have at least a bachelor's degree.
Wow, a lot of people.
I will say that this isn't. If you are a right-thinking American, this probably isn't the best right wink wink place to be.
We're plugging political conventions now.
He's gonna, the new format is Tom's Conservative Manifesto.
Wow.
That's your character.
Before we get into this, though, can we talk a little about immigration?
But only from Canadians.
I'm biting Lou Dobbs style right now.
Seattle is known for its rainfall, and it does have a couple more.
Wikipedia URL.
It's only 37.1 inches a year, which is less than New York, Atlanta, Houston, and most of the Eastern Seaboard. So
wow.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Okay, so I'm done.
Can you find something out for me by tomorrow?
Yes. Sure.
How many home runs has Jose Canseco hit in Seattle?
Seattle? Okay, yeah, I can find that. Home runs by ballpark.
I bet over under five.
Five in Seattle?
Are we going to talk about comics?
Let's talk about some comic books.
All right.
We've got a very knowledgeable guest here with us. Wow. So pontificate, Josh. Go.
Yeah.
Go.
This is our new format.
Show for us, will you?
I'm really not prepared, but if there's anybody who can just talk ad nauseum straight for a lot of time, I'm your man.
So this another convention for you guys. I've seen you at WonderCon this year in New York and now Seattle. Have you guys hit any other conventions?
No, that would be all, and we've got one left. We're gonna go to San Diego.
Oh, okay.
At the end of the year, and that's four is a lot.
Yeah.
In a year, that's what I'm learning.
It's a lot of kissing babies and
yeah, and social misunderstandings. I gotta be on my toes here because of the back of the cover. You know, like
people are going to know who you guys are.
Yeah.
If someone asks you for an autograph, can I slap
If that
them?
Happens, then we all need to stop because the world has gone off its axis.
There's something that's woefully
I'm a fan who talks about artists that not a lot of people know about. That's what we do. I mean, how giant of a head can you get doing that?
Full head, though.
So I shouldn't have ordered that gold-trimmed suit that I was going to wear.
Well, I tell you, we've been on hiatus for quite a while, but we came back a couple weeks ago. But Sal,
yes.
This is kind of your first chance to get behind the mic. What have you been reading over the last
like
4 months?
Or
anything that's stuck in your melon?
I haven't been reading a whole lot, quite honestly. I have huge stacks of trades that I need to read at some point, but every time I pick one up, I just go, I don't feel like reading it, but
it's
I did start.
It's not a ringing endorsement for comics.
Well, it's not anything about the comics haven't changed. It's just
you
know,
have.
I've changed. I've grown as a person, and no.
What does that mean?
I did start reading 100 Bullets again from the beginning, and wow, it makes a whole lot more sense if you read it in like 50 issue chunks. It makes.
So if you take 2 days and you don't do anything but read that book,
it makes
then,
a lot of
then
sense.
It's rewarding.
It all comes together. And then,
but if you read it over the course of 4 years,
it makes no sense.
No.
Nothing.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that someday. Because I have the first 50. Not really too far after that.
I kept getting that series, but I haven't read it in over a year. I keep accumulating
really
the issues, and that's been my plan the entire time was to.
But it does make complete sense if you read. You just have to read it in big chunks because
there was
it's
too many characters,
yeah,
and it was
you know,
so.
It lost me when it had. It lost me around like the 5th or 6th issue. As soon as it.
Really.
Yeah, but I really liked the first story, and I thought it was the whole bullets thing was just going to be a framing device to tell stories, and then as soon as the conspiracy part started coming in, I was sort of like,
Well, that's actually, I mean, that was exactly my complaint about it, although I would say that lasted probably 20 issues or so. If you remember, I think issue 11 or 12, I don't remember issue numbers, was about a waitress or something. It was a single issue story. It was one of the best.
Single issues and a couple of smaller.
It was a fantastic. I remember whatever it was, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. It was a single issue one that was one of the best stories I've ever read in comics, which kept me around for probably the next 40 issues when I wasn't enjoying it.
Well, I really love that issue from 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It is a sprawling conspiracy, but it does make a lot more sense if you are reading.
It's funny with a comic like that, you tend to blame yourself.
I'm not good enough.
I'm not
you know, like I
understand.
I just have to keep reading it because I'm not getting this, and I can't give up on him. I know he's telling a good story, and you know what? Maybe sometimes he's not. There it is.
Yeah. But it's scary if you ever see Brian Azzarello at a convention. It's very scary to walk up to him and ask him questions. Oh yeah.
He loves conventions. He loves the people. He's a people person.
He is a people person.
If you see him at a convention, go up to him and just start talking
and hug. Big hugs.
Yeah,
big hugs. Before I talk
he'll,
to him.
He'll enjoy it. Don't tell him I told you to do that.
Before we start talking, come here and I give him a hug.
Which creator gives the best hugs, then, in your opinion?
No one's actually ever done it. Usually I don't get farther than that. They say, please go away.
Dan Slott's a big man. He wraps those big, meaty arms around you. And
squeezes tight.
Wow. It's something. No, I don't.
Should we end all our interviews with a
hug?
Yeah, all of us.
Group hug.
Park it in Hug Harbor.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I'm all right. Hug you, Josh.
I read Miracle Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've been rereading stuff. That's kind of what I've been doing lately. But
you forgot that there was a microphone in front of you.
Yeah, well, I haven't done this in a while. I'm
know.
Rusty, man.
It's going to take us. Yeah, I felt a little rusty on the return episode. And
I was doing the show by myself. A mock one at home. I'd have to have mic stands.
And he had dolls and chairs. What do you think, Miss Polly? JLA was pretty good this week, no?
Tom, tell me how I should feel. Yes, it was good.
Yes, you should buy this.
Yeah. It was great. Some great episodes.
So do you have Miracle Man? In what form do you have it?
I think the first 9 or 10 issues,
I
have the rest of it digitally.
Yeah, I do not really pirate comics. I just don't do it. I don't like reading them like that. The only thing I've ever done that with is Miracle Man.
You can't get it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I feel entitled. That and British TV shows. But either way.
Yes. High five.
Well honestly, I wouldn't, rereading Miracle Man, past the 6th issue, I really don't care about that. I mean, that
book
just gets stupid.
Huh.
Well, not stupid, but I mean, it just gets silly. I mean, it's like, the tone of it completely changes, and the first like 5 or 6 issues are fantastic, but then it just becomes very bizarre, and I don't know. I think if that ever gets reprinted, people are going to be really disappointed in it because it's so
talked up.
Because it's the thing that doesn't
really
exist.
Someone will read it and be like,
I mean, it's kind of interesting because you see him play with a lot of the conventions of stuff that he later did in like V for Vendetta and Watchmen, but it's very early stuff and it's very rough. He doesn't have it quite polished at that point. So I just think people are going to be really disappointed.
It's more like an early demo tape.
I think it's one of those things where if you were around at the time, it was probably the most amazing thing. But since then, it's actually all become so cliched and repeated from what he did the first time that it's hard to appreciate it. The all in the family syndrome, as I call it.
Well, the century.
Yes.
Well, don't get Tom started on the century.
Well, no, I'm talking about the Jenkins miniseries. It was
Jay Lee.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that it was very derivative of Miracle Man.
Well, I mean, you have a lot of work that was really derivative of the book Superpowers, which was written before all of those, and you know, I mean, they all kind of
wasn't it Super Folks
or Super Folks. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Super
I was like,
folks.
No one's ripping off the Alex Ross.
Yeah,
no.
Super Folks.
Super Folks.
So I don't know. Yeah, they all kind of stemmed from that, I think.
I've had those files on my computer for like 2 years now, and I've read like 2 issues. I just hate reading comics like that, so yeah. I just haven't done it. And I'm like, this is supposed to be a great work, and I just can't.
You can't get
in. I don't want to read it like that.
Well,
I guess
you need the paper.
It's still incomplete, though, right?
Well, no, Moore finished. I mean, Moore finished his run of it basically, and then like 2 years later, well, Moore did 12 or 15 issues or 13 issues, I think, and then he took like a year off. Because there was problems with the publishers. And then he came back and did like 2 or 3 more issues, but you could tell the change in it was so drastic. And then he's finished it at like 16, I think, or something like that, 17 maybe. And then a while later, Gaiman came in and did...
It was 25 issues,
yeah.
I think.
Well,
so.
No, it went up to 20, yeah, so yeah, it was like 10.
I can't imagine taking that much time... Just in between issues, taking years
you
between.
You can't? You read Marvel books?
Intentionally.
Did you pick up the Action Comics Annual this past year?
How long was that? That was...
It was a while.
It started in December 2006.
Holy.
Wow.
Crud.
It was a really good end. I mean, it would have been better if...
I remember being so excited. I read that first issue of Action Comics. This was the first issue of Action Comics that I had bought in maybe ever.
Yeah.
And I was like... That was really good, and it was even a little cheesy, but in a good way, like
in a Jeff Johns way.
I think it's the Donner.
Yeah, no, it was the Donner. Yeah. But I was like, all right, I'm going with it. And I read that one, and the second one, I was like, I'm having fun with this.
I love the art in it.
Yeah,
I love the panel layout.
Should for how long it took? Started.
Yeah, well, that's true enough.
Ridiculously good.
Was it Kubrick's fault that it was?
Yeah,
so delayed. Was it? What the hell else is he doing?
There's substitute teaching a lot at the
school.
Yeah. Like, they get a call, like, I need you to come, and he's like, oh, I got pages to finish, Dad!
No!
I need you!
You get down here right now.
You don't want to disappoint the family, do you?
You get down here. Right after you mow the grass. Get down here.
God.
Call your brother. That's a
Well, I mean, we've been seeing that. DC's been doing that. I'm kind of split on, and it seems to happen with Superman books, where they'll start a storyline, and for some reason the conclusion to it will be delayed, and then they'll start another storyline, and then come back and finish. They did that with Superman Confidential on the Darwin Cook and Tim Sale run, where it was a 6-issue story. They got to...
Five?
Got to issue 5 and then didn't finish it until like 12.
Well, that's a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. I mean, like, they can just stop the book, you know, or they can put out product. You know, it's the publisher is shoehorned, really. There's not much they can do.
People complain about it either way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I finally got to the point, it's like, you know what? When it comes out, I'll be here. So go ahead and start another
Hopefully.
Story. I can.
Oh, the way you drink, you never know.
Yeah, never say that, Chris.
Yeah. Not
sucking down chicken wings like that. I mean, come on.
Oh,
you're just asking for trouble, buddy.
You know, I just hope I live long enough to see the end of this Action Comics story.
My dream.
Call Johns. How does it end?
How does it end? What happens in the end?
I can't tell you. That would be one.
No, it doesn't.
I just can't tell you.
I thought it was, did you guys read it? Did you read the Action Comics?
I have not read it yet.
I really liked that the last couple pages in the back where they sort of reintroduced all the cast of characters. Like, they brought back the, like, Steve Lombard character, like, the actual people that work at the newspaper. They brought back people that you're supposed to remember because it always seems like no one else works there that you're ever supposed
it's
to.
It's just 3 people.
Yeah, it's just like 3
entire
people
newspaper.
And random people who come and go.
And extras.
Yeah, so it was nice to see them reintroduce, like, you know, the football jock sports reporter who picks on Clark Kent and the gossip columnist and...
Only Johns.
Well,
only
she has been, yeah, Johns had... They kind of did it, sprinkled it throughout.
Yeah, but it was nice issues. To see, like, oh, there's more people that work at the...
more people with full names at the DC Universe.
Yeah.
It's like, Tim Johnson. He works down in copy editing.
It's like, finally. Finally it happened.
Well, We've anxiously await this year or this week's pick of the week. Can you give us a little preview? And I was going to ask, whenever you do these conventions, how do you find time to, first of all, read your books while you're traveling and do? And did you guys go back to the hotel last night and record an episode? That would have been really sloppy.
Everybody wants to. No, I mean, basically, like when it comes to this kind of week, we had crammed. Basically, it was like Wednesday, I had the pick of the week. The way that it works is that, you know, Wednesday the books come out. We try to put the pick of the week goes up Wednesday night. And then on Friday, there's a short video episode, the mini, about it, where we show the book. That's right. Nice. You're almost off. You missed one.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, the audio pick of the week show comes out. Which, so, I mean, you've got the pick of the week just crammed down your throat as much as possible. I don't know. I had a shitload of books that I read on Wednesday. I wrote the thing that night. I shot the video that night. I edited it and uploaded that on Thursday. It's out on Friday. We recorded the show Thursday night before we left, you know, on the flight Friday morning. Ron got here Friday, edited the show, you know, put it up on Sunday.
It's a good thing you guys are young. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what was your pick this week?
Pretty Baby Machine number 1 from Image Comics.
Ooh, that was
really
good. Huh? I haven't read it.
Really
it
good.
Really
and
good.
Based on the title, it has nothing to do with reproduction.
What?
Yeah, it's not
that's
an attractive baby mama.
That's my nickname for my girlfriend.
It's a story set in Chicago.
Ooh.
Ooh. 1930s sort of fictional history gangsters. Pretty Boy Floyd, Machine Gun Kelly.
Wait, there are gangsters in Chicago in the 30s?
It's true. Involved? And they're all going to take on, ready for this?
Babyface Nelson?
Al Capone. That's Babyface Nelson.
And they're going to take on.
And so I don't think it's a true history, but it's all real characters and real settings.
No,
and
none
real
of those guys took on Capone.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was a really good. It's only a 3-issue mini, so
I'm gonna have to pick that up.
Yeah,
in trade.
Get over to ifanboy.com for more details. That's what I'm saying.
Nice. Well, Tom, should we do a little impromptu top of the stack here?
Yeah, why not?
With that, okay.
I have to go work.
Yeah, go.
Oh,
okay.
I have to go be on shows.
Yeah, all right, go take care of business.
I'll see you around.
Yeah.
All right.
See you guys later.
See you. All right, thanks.
See you at the bar.
Give him a hug.
Hug goodbye. We'll everybody has to give us a hug.
Yeah.
Out,
all right, that's hugging. That's good hug.
Good hug.
Yeah.
My pick of the week would have been...
No. That's their show.
Top
come on.
Of the stack.
Damn you, Tom. Like,
Jesus.
But top of the stack.
Been hanging out
been,
with them too much.
Rand Thanagar, Holy War, number 1.
Oh, really?
One.
Yeah. That's Starlin?
Starlin and Ron Lim. And it was really good.
Oh, nice.
It's really well
written. Is this all spinning out of... it was the...
it's got... The Kaz Ties
Rand Thanagar War?
Yeah.
Countdown.
Countdown to Adventure.
Right.
Carrying
and
over a lot of those
and
ideas.
Mystery in Space.
Yes, and Mystery
yes,
in Space.
Yes, that's what I was trying to think
the whole
of.
Plot of it is that the character... Lady Styx from 52 in Countdown to Adventure, she infected Ran with a disease that makes everyone worship her and mm-hmm. become sort of like lunatics. Well, Adam Strange got rid of the sickness, but it turns out that the Iranians really like having a god because they're really science-based,
right.
And now they've become like fanatics and they still believe in her even though they're not infected. So he's trying to figure out a way to like get them to stop because the Thanagarians are now worshipping the god, the church that was in Mystery in Space.
Okay,
so
they're
on the same planet. They both are following these really fanatical religions, and they're sort of on a course to like collide with each other. So the story is a lot of Adam Strange, and you know, working with Hawkman. But there's all tons of characters.
They weren't worshipping Lobo.
No, Lobo.
Priest Lobo, whatever.
Was it the fish god?
It's got like a really big epic cast trip because you have Adam Strange and Hawkman, but you also have Captain Comet, or just Comet, as he likes to be called, and Tyrone.
It's just Comet.
Yeah, and there's some really funny parts because Comet doesn't want to do dangerous jobs anymore. So he's
tired of dying.
Yeah, and Tyrone is like, you know, angry because they're going to be poor. So he's trying to talk about...
I want Starlin to do another Captain Comet book. So, I really enjoyed that.
Oh, Mystery in Space was great. The second trade just came
Bizarro
out.
Bizarro is in it, and so is...
Really?
There's a scene with Bizarro and one of the old Starmen, Prince Gavin, where Bizarro crashes on his world and is, like, wrecking everything, and Prince Gavin... Prince Gavin has, you know, he's got a plan to... he uses the something that no one ever does, where he speaks reverse to Bizarro, so Bizarro doesn't get angry, and he's like talking to him and like invites him to have a meal. So it's like, it's really, and you don't quite know how that's going to tie into the overall story. But
interesting.
It's very good.
Starlin, you know, Starlin's such an interesting writer. I mean, the guy's had quite the history of big things.
Oh, he does. Stuff, he does cosmic probably better
does,
than
he,
anybody.
Yeah, he does still do some amazing cosmic stuff.
Fun.
And he has seemed to tie in, you know, he ties in so many sort of real emotions about stuff, whether it's sickness or dying or family or
well, there's a suicide
religion
bomber in the
or,
issue,
you know,
so
I mean,
it's like...
He's able to... I think that's what makes his sci-fi stuff so successful, is that he doesn't tie it in with, like... He doesn't tie it into reality with, like, common objects or places, but he uses, like, things that everybody goes through.
Yeah, he used guideposts.
And it was quite funny, too. I kind of like... It was like Mystery in Space, you know. The way he writes Comet and Tyrone is very funny and very like different from how I usually think of Starlin's writing.
Right.
You know,
he's usually killing someone.
Yeah, it's usually more cosmic. You know, it's usually more cosmic and bigger and like not so personal dialogue. You know, I wouldn't say that's the thing I think of when I think of Starlin, but he is doing that really well with the specific
characters.
Have
you guys read Cosmic Odyssey that he did with Mignola years and years ago?
I think I had, yeah.
One of my favorite DC stories. It's if you're not a DC reader and you want to read a great just, you know, a great story about that certain era of the JLA and some fourth world stuff, it's really a fun series, and you get to see a younger Mike Mignola's art way before Hellboy, and it is a great story. It holds up incredibly well because Starlin has such a great feel for cosmic stories.
Well, I was surprised by how much I liked Ranthon. I just picked it up and was like, oh, you know, it looks interesting, and I was like, I was actually really good.
Surprised. It's one of those books that it's like, you know, it almost seems like a throw-in kind of thing.
Yeah. But I read it and I was like, that was pretty good. And the art was pretty good, too. It was nice.
It was Ron Lim?
Ron Lim, yeah.
What did he do? Didn't he just do something else before that?
I'm not sure.
I can't remember. He's got such a cool style because it's like older school.
Yeah.
He's updated it.
Yeah.
And with the new coloring and stuff.
It does look really cool with the coloring. It's really cool. It's like comic booky coloring and like very bright and...
That's cool.
It's nice.
Good for
a
child.
Check it out.
Sure.
My top of the stack this week, or pick of the week, in honor of our IA fanboy brethren, House of Mystery, number one.
Oh, yeah.
I just kind of picked it up at the shop. I had kind of forgotten that it was coming out. And it's Bill Willingham, and I'm trying to think
Billingham, as I like to call him.
Who the other writer is? And I'm
Matt
Sturgis.
Sturgis,
yes. And a host of artists. It's basically DC's new horror anthology, almost. I can't call it an anthology. It's not a true anthology.
No, and I don't think it's going to be an anthology book either.
But it kind of reads as
the
one.
The initial one certainly did. Yeah.
But in a very interesting way, in that they'll introduce a story in the middle of the book that will kind
of telling.
That would be almost a standalone story with a new artist to set up the feel of that story. So it almost has an anthology feel.
And for people that aren't familiar with the House of Mystery, it's an old DC book title, House of Mystery, and then you had House of Suspense,
House of Secrets,
or House of Secrets, right? And it's nobody knows much about it. Hence the name, but
it was
there's people
up.
That are trapped there, basically. It's a spooky house in a cemetery, and it changes shape and all sorts of things. And there's people there that are trapped in it. And
well, it was picked up by Gaiman.
In Sandman.
Sandman. Yeah, so you see a lot of the same... these.
It ran for quite a while back in the 60s.
Well, it started as...
You can get it in Showcase, right?
Yeah, it's just an anthology, but over time they introduced sort of Kane, who's the guy who owns the house, and he sort of became like your crypt keeper for all the stories.
Right.
And then they sort of tied the house. I think Alan Moore did a story that tied the guy who ran the House of Secrets was
Abel,
and they were brothers, and every day they meet up and Kane kills Abel, and then the next day he's alive again, and they meet up, and there's like a rivalry between the two, and their house, like... exists in this another world where you know, things happen that are mysterious.
And that's and that's how the book opens up is with the Cain and Abel scene. But the middle story that was it Jill Thompson that illustrated the fly story?
Wasn't Jill. I can't remember.
Yeah, once again, I don't have the book.
Pablo Ruiz or something like that?
No, I don't remember.
Because I know that Jill's going to be doing work on the series.
I don't remember the artist.
But, yeah, just the freakiest story about sex with giant flies.
Yes, it was very creepy. To take a horror anthology and put it in Vertigo, that was a perfect story to kick it off because it was sort of out of the blue and very creepy and weird and bizarre, but hopefully, I mean, it was a very cool first issue, and hopefully,
Well, the setup is that these people are trapped in the house in a bar, kind of a otherworld bar, and they entertain each other by telling stories, and those will be the stories
that happen in the currency of the house is because they have no other currency.
Yep, so. The only currency we have is our story. So yeah, House of Mystery number one. Very impressed. Looking forward to the next one. So check that out if you haven't, and if you're you know, horror is your bag.
The horror books.
Mm-hmm. Well, my top of the stack.
What's your top of the stack?
I have a top of the stack.
Miracle
it's an older
Man
book.
Four.
No,
the Old Testament.
Yes, the Old Testament. I really like. No. Actually, I just picked up the re-release of the Killing Joke hardcover.
Ooh.
Alan Moore and Brian Bolan and Dave Stewart.
You finished that up.
Oh, no, it wasn't Dave Stewart.
You finished that up over about Idaho.
Yeah, I was reading it on the plane, and obviously I've read it before. It had been a while, but I picked up the hardcover, which is gorgeous. The recoloring on it is phenomenal. I mean, Bolan's work is so good. Anyway, but the recoloring was really well done.
If you have the Alan Moore Stories of the DC Universe, which has the Killing Joke in it, do yourself a favor and pick up this hardcover.
It's really nice.
It is, oh my God, so much better than that. The first oversized and the recoloring. I mean, you have to do a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, it's certainly worth it. And it wasn't very expensive either. I mean, it's not a great price.
$20.
You can get it on Amazon for like $15 or something. But
or InStockTrades.com.
Sorry.
Thanks.
But, you know, reading it again, it was interesting just kind of thinking of it in context of the time. And still, it sort of surprises me how that book became canon, and they let Alan Moore sort of do that stuff, you know, Barbara Corden becoming paralyzed and basically tortured by the Joker, and Jim Gordon driven a bit insane, and it was just surprising.
It's a brutal book.
It's very brutal. It's not very long. It's not a particularly long story, and it really reading it now, it almost seems like it would have been an Elseworld story, or just a sort of not throwaway, but
we can't use this.
Yeah, you know what I mean. It sort of surprises me that they
stuck with it.
Yeah, stuck with it and really did it.
I know there's people that hate that story because of the ending.
We had this conversation on the plane. Yeah. I said that. My only problem with it was at the very end, the Batman and the Joker hysterically laugh over everything that has taken place, and you know.
Considering the brutality of what the Joker has done.
Yeah, it's, you know, Jim Gordon's been run almost insane. Barbara Gordon may be dead or dying. And it's like, oh my God, how can Batman be laughing after all of these terrible, terrible events? And it sat with me very weird, but then you kind of...
It seemed to make sense because you have two people that are both sort of opposites of the same coin. They're both crazy in their own way. They're obsessed and crazed. And if you know, like the joke that the Joker tells at the end is a perfect example of what that ending means, is that there's no changing it. You know, Batman is never going to change the Joker. The Joker is never going to change the Batman. They'll never, you know, if you look at it in a meta sort of way, they're never going to stop fighting, and they're never going to stop being who they are. So all they can do is laugh about it at some point. Otherwise, you know, they're... I think that the joke at the end really was the illustration of what they were trying to say. Because if you don't know the joke, it's a lunatics trying to escape from a lunatic asylum, and they're on a rooftop, and the one says, "How are we going to get across?" The first guy jumps over the roof. The second goes, "I can't make that jump." Third guy goes, "Oh, I have a flashlight. I'll shine it across the roof. You can walk on it." And the second guy goes, "What, do you think I'm crazy? When I'm halfway across, you'll turn it off." And to me, I mean, that's just a perfect example of, like, that conversation they were having, because the whole book is about Batman going, this is going to end badly. I'm going to kill you, or you're going to kill me. Maybe
one of
we
us
can
is
change.
Die,
we can
yeah.
stop this. We don't have to do this. And the Joker basically saying, "Yeah, we do, because there's no changing. There's no. We are crazy in our own ways." So to me, it didn't bother me. But at the same time, to take that story and leave it as canon. That's why I think the story worked in it mm-hmm. in and of itself as a self-contained sort of thing. But to use it in canon seemed.
Yeah. Because I read it.
Not that I don't like it. I mean, I still think Barbara Gordon as Oracle is a much better character
oh, absolutely.
Than she ever was as Batgirl.
As Congresswoman Barbara Gordon?
Is she Congresswoman?
She was
Congresswoman.
She,
yeah.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah. But, and then also with the hardcover, there's a backup story that Brian Bolland did specifically for it. Basically, he does a little intro to it, and he said that he really just wanted to. Sort of draw all the scenes of Batman that he didn't get to draw in this. And so it starts off him talking to you and saying that he just wants to be a bad person. And so he just kind of like tortures and kills the Batman in this little backup story because he can. But I mean, it's absolutely beautiful.
It makes you want to see Brian Bolland do regular comic work because it is so,
oh, yeah.
so good.
Well, and interesting, in his foreword of the book, he says. He hasn't, since that book, he has not done a superhero comic for anyone other than Alan Moore. And he says it's almost been a tribute to him, saying, once you've worked with the best, there's yeah. no point in going anywhere else. So he hasn't done anything other than his own stuff and
done covers.
And,
yeah.
But he hasn't done a book other than an Alan Moore book. So, yeah. So he's friggin' awesome.
Yeah,
if you have a chance, pick up the art of Brian Bolland, his big hardcover, it's just amazing.
He's doing the Jack of Fables covers right
yeah,
now, so if you're not familiar with him, look at the
yeah.
Jack of Fables.
Did he do the Animal Man covers? Are those Bolland covers?
He did the Flash covers during John's run for a while.
What else did he do? Didn't he do a Shadow Pack cover, too? Or
you mostly
Countdown
see
the
stuff on
Mystery
on
or
he
something?
He did a story
or?
In the Fables... Like a two-page in 1001 Nights.
Okay.
Of Snowfall.
Yeah,
he did
yeah.
like a two-page story.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's.
Can I throw in another one that
Absolutely.
I
no,
read?
No.
And I'm not going to be able to remember.
We're here for 2 days, yes. Talk all you want.
It's the Countdown to Mystery? Was that the doc? Or no.
Yes.
Was the Dr. Fate
The
mini?
One that Gerber died
Gerber?
Before. Yeah, Countdown to Mystery.
God, was that good? And it's really, I mean... a shame that he didn't get to finish because I loved that.
Really?
It was very bizarre.
I'd say really. I mean, it's Gerber, so it was awesome.
I wish it would have been in a book by itself.
Outside
longer,
of
without, yeah, and without the other story.
Yeah.
I'm waiting
really,
for it to,
it
come,
to
out,
come out as its own.
As its own.
And I don't. Do you remember who the artist is on that?
Wasn't it Giustiniano?
I think. And awesome. Just... phenomenal, knocked it out.
Yeah,
of
I
park.
Got the first two, and then I was like,
I'm gonna
want it. It was excellent. It really was just a phenomenal story. Really cool. I mean, obviously, if you're like an old school Dr. Fate fan or something, you may not like it because
it's a
totally different kind of thing. Basically, a guy that becomes Dr. Fate that doesn't really want to doesn't. He's basically homeless, alcoholic, ex psychiatrist,
yep.
right? And the whole, and then he gets the helmet and. Is sort of going
through... like the
through.
Grandson of the original Dr. Fate. Like,
But it was just an excellent story. I mean, it really was one of my favorite things that nobody ever mentioned.
Yeah.
It was always one of my favorite JSA characters, so... Think any chance of him
really
popping up in JSA?
No, not the Gerber version.
Not this
but
one,
the,
no.
I liked what Gerber did, because to be honest, I always thought Dr. Fate was sort of toxic in a way. It was his history. There's a reason why I think they sort of shuffled him off at the end of JSA.
Yeah.
The first one, because his if you really look at that character,
it's pretty
Hector
tragic.
Hall, I mean,
yeah.
then they hit just it's impossible to figure out.
Well,
right.
Like, any character's history that gets tied in with Hawkman, you're going to have some issues
he was
with.
His character was important to Sand.
Right.
It's like
right.
he's been tied to like a thousand different things, and it got to the point I think where there was so much baggage. That you couldn't do a lot of stories with. And Gerber did a good job of finding a way
something
to just make a Dr. Fate that doesn't have
tied to anything else.
He doesn't have 1,000 pieces of info about him. He doesn't have a history as like 4 other characters.
But at the same time, giving you sort of some history on the Helm of the Fate, and more so than Dr. Fate necessarily. But I just thought it was a fantastic, fantastic story, fantastic art. I really, really liked it. I mean, it was just surprising. I was like, I'd never heard anybody even talk about it once. On any podcast, right? It's just like, man, this is such a good book.
Well, I mean, that's been DC for the last couple of years. Is that, you know, if you can get past the event books and kind of what they're really promoting, they've had some miniseries and some smaller series that have been outstanding comics, and I don't think that they get talked about enough. You know,
they get overshadowed.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we were talking about Mystery in Space, which I think was awesome. Really underexposed book. It was a great
book. I think it got a bit because when we were at Wizard World last year and
people were asking for a Captain Comet.
Well, I actually asked in the panel with Starlin. I asked, and the crowd. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people. Yeah, there was a lot of people in the crowd that were like cheering, wanting the same thing. So I think it got a fair amount of, but. Yeah, it was a really good book. Yeah.
Well, you see, you know, some of the minis, and I think it really started with the Infinite Crisis minis that all led into that with the Secret Six, or that was the Villains United and Shadow Pack, and these really good series that kind of spun out of that. We talked last week about Secret Six becoming an ongoing, and I love that that they're going back to the, you know, the Animal Man, Corey, and storyline. Yeah.
The only thing that bothered me with those Countdown books is I thought the Countdown to Adventure story, the lead story, was also very good, but it was wrapped up with that Forerunner story.
Yeah, which was...
And it was like, so... It's a tough position, because as a consumer, you're paying like $3.99 for a book that's got 2 stories, and one of the stories I didn't really want to read.
Right.
Like, the Eclipso
story...
Well,
you feel like you have to, because you paid for it.
The Countdown to Mystery one, I didn't really care about the Eclipso story all that much. Like, it had nice art, but the story itself was just sort of like, eh. And it's bad, because it makes it very easy to say, like, I dropped it because I'll wait for it to come out in one
as its own trade. Like Dr. 13 in the
Tales of the Unexpected.
Yeah, Tales of the Unexpected.
I love the Dr. 13 story.
Dr. 13 was phenomenal. The Spectre one was okay. Yeah. It wasn't bad, but compared to the Dr. 13,
the backup
story
was
fantastic.
I looked more forward to reading the backup story.
But they were smart and they put that out by itself.
They did put that out. That was Azzarello.
Which is bizarre.
It's not what you normally see from Azzarello.
Going back to Azzarello, you know, 100 Bullets, after reading that again, I was like, man, why has no one scooped this guy up to write a crime TV show? On FX, like FX Network TV show. It's like, this guy, 100 Bullets basically should be a weekly show on FX.
Yeah.
He writes such good, amazingly good dialogue. Yeah. Like it's kind of campy noir, but it's updated. And
whenever you think Azrael, you think about the very complex, multi-layered storylines. But you're right. You sit down, you read a page of his, and
he puts
his
so
dialogue
much.
Is very
his
compelling.
Dialogue does such a good job of telling you way more than what happens on the page.
Yeah.
Telling you histories and things, and I think that's what part of the I don't want to say problem, but it's part of the problem reading 100 Bullets. And why it's so complex is because he does that stuff. But if you really kind of look at his dialogue, is just so the timing on it is flawless, and
it never feels
stressed.
Forced.
Yeah, it's just so good. It's like, why is this guy not writing a TV show?
Why isn't he doing more?
Damn it, Brian Azzarello, get out there and
the one. Yeah, I mean, reading it monthly.
Oh, impossible. I don't know anybody that's
it's a book that people create Excel spreadsheets to track characters and their connections to each other.
But if you read about 10 issues at a time,
just
read like each
pages
arc.
Is too short. It's just too hard to... You have to either sacrifice how much layering there is, or you sacrifice... or you have more understandability, and you can't tell the story you want. It's like 22 pages isn't a big enough chunk.
It's definitely something to be read in trade. I think it works really well. But even that, I think you have to read, like... I think
five trades.
I think just wait until it's done.
I ain't coming to get them.
Absolute and just read the whole damn thing at once.
I think I'm going to get my my singles. I'm going to get them bound in like bound. Four volumes and do it.
Nice, very nice.
So the whole.
Do you
set.
Have any bound? Have you bound any?
I have comics? Not. I have not bound not any yet. Comics yet, and I've been trying to think of the right one. And I'm missing one issue of Gotham Central, or I was going to do that series, but they're coming out in hardcovers now.
Yeah. Which Son issue are you missing?
25.
I'll sell that to you for $200.
Sold.
All right. Oh, you heard it on the air. That's
I don't
a,
have
that's
it.
A
I'm
bound.
Kidding.
Oh,
sorry.
You don't. You should. I should.
I yeah. Why? Yeah, why should I? You should. You're the one that has all of them except that one.
Failure.
Why did you not get
you
that?
Failed.
Issue?
You know, that's why the book isn't around anymore.
Because
you didn't buy that.
Yeah.
Issue.
Why didn't you buy 25?
Beatty didn't put it in my box that week, and it sold out of the shop, and I haven't been. Maybe I can get it here at the convention.
I'm sure.
Maybe,
you can.
I'm sure you can.
Around Comics is proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. Ron, Connor,
hello,
the fanboys, they're back. It's
hello.
Mid afternoon.
We're doing a podcast where we only interview other people. Other podcasters.
Oh, so?
We just got a bite of lunch to eat. So lunch to eat.
Ron's dying.
A bite to eat at lunch.
The minutia. The minutia of the day.
The minutia of the day, yeah. My feet aren't really hurting. It's all right.
That's good, but it's not a carpeted show.
It's not a carpeted show at all. No, it's a hard concrete kind of show, unfortunately.
It's an interesting show. I mean, it's smaller in the side, more in the vein of Heroes Con.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good-looking women.
But also very...
Indeed, sir.
Beyond that, there's a lot of really good creators here.
Yes,
everybody's
true.
Surprising.
Everywhere.
You just walk right up to them, and they'll ignore you. And
No, they say, go away.
Yeah, bumped into Ed Brubaker. He was on his way. Everyone's on their way to a panel. Either that or that's the...
there's like two panels.
Or that's the convenient... Oh, God, there's Chris. I'm going to a panel. So I'll catch up with you later.
Like there's a million panels. Everybody seems to be doing these panels.
Yeah, well,
there's a woman in a cape with a dog.
It's Crypto.
It's the evil Crypto.
Yeah, it's the black Crypto.
So,
good costumes. I've seen actually some really good scrolls here.
I haven't seen a single scroll.
Well, do you know? Who do
I'll
you
just
trust?
Have to kill them. I don't trust anybody at this convention.
And Mr. Kitters, your defense is you thought he was a scroll and you couldn't tell for sure until he was
replaced.
Dead.
I got replaced at Linda's last night.
By a 20-year-old scroll.
Yeah, he could get in. No, the best costume I've seen is this great guy Gardner walking around.
Yes.
Bowl cut.
Again, there's a lot of hot, a lot of really good ones. There's not a lot of costumes, but there's a lot of really quality.
Yeah, high quality. Like
there's a really good Magneto.
Well done. There's not a lot of like half-assed like that. Oh yeah, that Magneto was the best.
Yeah, the Magneto was really good.
He looked like
really
Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
He was Ian McKellen.
You shall not pass.
You shall not pass.
Did you guys see the like evil demon rabbit from Donnie Darko?
No.
Yes, I did.
That's probably too much.
Yeah.
If I saw an evil demon rabbit,
I
probably...
And I saw a mom and her daughter, and the mom's like, look at the bunny!
Look at the little bunny!
Yeah, it eerily, like... Yeah, it was like, wow, is that the actual costume from the movie?
A ratty rabbit costume?
Yeah, so...
And it wouldn't be a comic convention without Star Wars...
Oh yeah, the
stormtroopers are here.
Apparently, the 501st or whatever, the
501st.
They're just everywhere. They're just Mino speak well. They're just everywhere.
Are they a mobile unit, or do they have like regiments throughout the country?
You would think that they'd have other the 502nd, the
503rd.
I want
to see them fight somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see their moves.
You know, we I've never heard an interview with one of. We need to Tom, go get me a stormtrooper.
You need to get, as the official podcast, you guys should be on the stormtrooper.
Yeah, definitely. And all the hot ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely need...
Aren't they all hot ladies under the stormtrooper costumes?
Isn't I like to... They're hotter with them on.
I love it when, as we're talking, people are just randomly walking by and throwing stuff at us. Yeah. Here you go.
What's free here? Is this mic free? Can I go? This is the free table,
this.
Right?
Check this.
Well, I can't believe they have a MacBook Pro at the free table.
Yeah, right. Yeah, my job would love that. Guys, I had a little problem this weekend.
I was looking for some books to buy. There's a few. There's some good 25-cent bins. You do have to fight old men for them, though. There's guys with binders.
Actually, I didn't know.
I haven't seen any luggage carts.
Oh, yeah.
There's one really big, like.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah, and he had them, like. The bins were numbered. It's like, you know, bin one,
he
bin
has
two,
a,
bin
he
three.
He has a trolley.
Oh, it's a dealer. Yeah, it's totally a dealer that's come here. And it's like, you see like eight of the same hardcover. That's, you know, it's like, okay, well, that's
quite a
shop
line
owner.
For
I wonder
Kirkman.
If you, as a creator, what you think when you see that roll up to you, you know? Like,
I want a cut.
Yeah, no kidding. He's going to sell it all. He's going to sell it. Yeah.
Steranko, it's funny.
Is he here?
If you, no, he's not.
He couldn't get in.
He only, yeah.
He couldn't get in again. His ID
was no good.
I think he only does the New York show. Yeah. But
he's got
a gig probably. I think this is still how he does it. He will sign books for free if he's personalizing them.
Right.
But if you ask him to just sign his name,
he won't.
He will, but at.
He'll punch you.
Yeah, no, that's Darwin Cook. That's Darwin Cook. He's the only one that physically abuses people. But
Darwin's good.
We love Darwin. It's why, that's
Darwin
why I
lays
love
the
Darwin.
Smack down when he has to.
Absolutely. He's a man of action. But Steranko, I think, will charge like $5 or something if it's not personalized. And his whole thing is, you know, if you want me to sign it for you, then absolutely. But if you're gonna sell this, I want my cut, which I totally believe
I'm
in
like
that.
Neil Adams, who just wants his cut of everything.
Hey, man,
he should get his cut of everything.
Absolutely, yeah.
Everyone should get everything. eBay is full of vultures,
scavengers
living off the pop culture
revolution.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I think that's changed the sketch, the whole sketch.
Well, that's why they all charge now.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was, I forget what artist it was, but would do free sketches, and then he started seeing his sketches pop up on eBay for like $60, and it pissed him off, and rightfully so. It's like, I'm doing this for free for people who like my work, and then you're turning around and selling it.
Well, no, that's what we were saying, like, you know, six, seven years ago in San Diego, like, we filled sketchbooks of free sketches, and now it's just like, you know,
the lesson is, as always, the internet ruins everything.
Yeah.
I'm sure Gambit was involved too. There's a guy in a Gambit costume.
And Roger Stern. I saw the Gambit.
It was a Roger Stern costume?
Yeah, I saw somebody dressed up as Roger Stern. It was amazing. It was so realistic.
It was very lifelike.
It was so realistic.
I went up and touched the mask, and I was like...
They're selling Kurt Busiek bodysuits over there.
Oh, he's here.
Yeah, he is.
He's wearing one, I believe.
The talent list for this show,
it's really impressive.
It's outstanding.
The Artist Alley is amazing.
And it's not a big show. It's smaller than WonderCon, which
it's smaller than Heroes, to be honest. Yeah.
But I like that.
Yeah,
and
so do I. Yeah.
This reminds me
of Chicago, actually.
Oh,
minus the glitz.
Rosemont?
Minus the glitz, yeah, the Rosemont. If you took the Chicago room and took out the three video game booths.
You really think?
Demon Wars.
This reminds me a lot of Chicago.
Okay, as far as it's a lot smaller than Chicago. Well, Chicago's the dealer area.
It's very big.
That's
and Artist
really
Alley's
big.
Huge, but like the kind of room and the vibe.
Yeah. And it's
and you guys are here, so that kind of bias.
There you go. It's the Chicago feel. But no, plenty of traffic. But I don't feel like it's not the crush that New York was.
No.
Right,
So I'm a fan of the city.
It's a great
fan
show.
Of the show.
It's a good show.
Absolutely.
Good times. Can I get a bell?
Oh, we're calling this the Burnham Bell now.
Oh, the Burnham Bell.
Give me a good ring.
There's a pretty significant line for Kirkman over at the Image booth.
There is, yeah.
It's been there.
Oh,
the whole day.
Hey, there we go. It's. Let me see if we can talk. Would you guys have a minute or two to talk with us? We found some stormtroopers and
get out of here.
Bubba Fett.
We're not cool.
Bubba
Fett.
Not as good.
Have a seat, whoever. We were actually just talking about it's the 501st, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And we've never actually talked to any members of the 501st. We've tons of questions. Are you guys like a mobile unit, or do you have regiments spread out around the country?
The 501st is actually an international costuming group that centers around the imperial costuming.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's different garrisons and squads all over the country and all over the world. So,
and
we're the local Garrison Titan.
Okay. And what is your name?
My name is Walter.
Walter?
Do you wear the same costume every time?
I don't know. I've actually got two different versions of the officer costume, which I'm wearing now, and then I also have a Stormtrooper, TK.
Nice. Now, comic book conventions, the 501st has become a staple at comic book conventions. Are there other conventions, you know, like Gen Cons and gaming conventions or Star Wars conventions, obviously?
Yeah. Yeah, we had a huge presence at the Star Wars celebrations,
mm-hmm.
You know, 4 and 3, and we actually to the point where Lucas got us involved with the volunteering. So we were actually involved with the planning as an organization. Was involved with the planning of the event, and as far as getting members to help out with line control and various different things. Celebrity, you know, VIP escort duties and things like that.
Just the accuracy.
I'm sorry, I just looked around and I'm interviewing both of them.
The accuracy. The Boba Fett costume is amazing. It's
thank you.
Where do you procure the costumes? Do you make them yourselves or buy?
Do you want to take this one, Mr. Fett?
You know, they're kind of a mix of like fan-made pieces, friends that make pieces. I mean, they're all essentially fan-made, but you know, guys make different parts, and we're all friends. And
yeah, and it's it's a lot of it is like you're saying, fan-made. But then there's also quite a bit of found parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like the end of his blaster. I mean, you know, if you look at it, it's actually part of a hair dryer. Or no, that one's the flash tube.
That's
sorry,
the flash tube from the old
from
camera,
which the original lightsabers were made out of.
Oh wow!
You know, and so things like that. So we actually a lot of the costumes to make them more accurate are actually made using the same parts that were the prop makers used when they were making them originally.
Now, are there people that were involved in the films that stay involved with the 501st and say, oh yeah, hey, this is what we used for this and
a little bit. Mm-hmm. Most of the stuff though is just a lot of research and a lot of just, you know, watching the movies frame by frame and poring over reference material that Lucas has put out and things like that. And it's gotten to be a little bit easier now, and the quality of the costumes has actually gone up within the last couple of years. With the introduction of the high definition and that version.
Sure.
Because we can pull a high def picture and then be able to just really zoom in on it and say, okay, this piece, we thought it was this, but now we realize because we've been able to get a better
picture.
Oh,
that's a part of a toaster.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
That's a toaster knob.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you know, locally, I know that you guys travel around and you do have a lot, so do you get together, you know, like for card games and show up in costume?
Armor parties.
Armor parties?
Armor parties.
We do armor parties. We're kind of like any other social networking group in that, you know, we do get together, we have barbecues, and we have, you know, get
together. MySpace with blasters.
Yeah, kind of, you know, we'll do rock band tournaments, you know. Just
so you play rock band in the Stormtrooper?
Not so much.
But see, that's an image in my mind.
Now, sure, we also have subgroups of the 501st. We have what we call detachments. And I'm Trooper TK4205 of WhiteArmor.net, the 1st Imperial Stormtrooper Detachment.
Okay.
I'm the armor over there, so if you guys come see us at WhiteArmor.net, you'll find a...
Bell.
We ring that when someone plugs something.
Nice.
Find a lot of armor building tips over there, and we've been online now for 2 years. In the first year, we gained 800 members.
Wow.
Wow.
So when people join, let's say someone
was really interested in doing this, but they're not necessarily big into costuming. Is it like a networking thing where people will help you out and how to put it together?
Sure.
You know, if you don't really know how to do it, there's
And everybody has their skill sets. Like some people might be like, oh, I can sew. I'm pretty good at sewing. So you know, but you know, when it comes to trimming plastic or you know, modding this or that, you're not really good at it. So, you know, people will, you know, kind of barter, you know, abilities.
You sew this for me, and I'll mold this for you.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. I mean, does it amaze you that the popularity that the movies have sustained over the years, that this organization spawned out of this, and now we're, what, 30 years removed?
30-plus years, yeah.
Well, I was 10 years old when it came out in the theaters. I went to see it. Mm-hmm. And I've been waiting 30 years for this, to own a set of this, and to be able to wear a stormtrooper and be a stormtrooper for the pilot.
What about this? What was it about the stormtrooper that attracted you to being a stormtrooper? Because I would think mostly like the average kid probably doesn't watch the movie and think,
well,
I want to be, because they just keep getting shot.
No. you would be surprised. You would be surprised. It's something about the white armor, and you know, it's pretty menacing, and
sure.
being you know, one of just many, you know. You
and you're not sure what was in it. When I seen it at 10, I wasn't sure what was inside.
Yeah,
that's true.
Whether it was a person or a robot. But it was the most, we'd never seen a costume like that in the movies.
Yeah,
and it's now so iconic, and it was the black and the white. I mean,
that's
awesome. You know, it's we were talking about it, and have never taken the opportunity. You know, you guys are a fixture of every con that we go to, and it's like, why have we never talked to the 501st? This is awesome.
The Boba Fett has that the New York one. The one had a creepy voice that I didn't really want to.
It was kind of off-putting.
Yeah.
Off-putting.
Yeah. like, okay, I don't want to talk.
So why Boba Fett?
I don't know. When I saw the movies when I was a little kid, he was the coolest, most intimidating guy. He captured the coolest guy in the movie, Han Solo. And, I mean, how more badass can you be than Han Solo? You know,
absolutely.
Except with green armor.
And look at that helmet.
Yeah, look.
It's a nice sound. It's a badass helmet.
It was just the most visually like shocking and exciting costume to me in the movies.
Now, just speaking of the helmets, and you don't have your stormtrooper helmet on at the moment. I mean, how hot does it get at these things?
It's a little warm.
Yeah,
It's a little warm. You got to take breaks.
Yeah, you got to go home just smelling like ass.
There's a lot of people sweat.
Just go home and smell like ass.
This is different than mine. Mine's plastic. If it's hot, I get really hot. If it's cold, I get really cold.
Oh, no insulation. Yeah.
There's a lot of people.
Not a good R value in the in the stormtrooper.
You're not the only
turn
one.
Turn on the AC.
Amongst the con funk. So,
yeah.
You know.
The con smell. Yeah. It's everywhere. It is, a lot of people aren't wearing armor and are sweating a lot.
And the other thing to mention with the 501st. The other thing to mention with the 501st is it was founded, and one of the basic principles it was founded with was they wanted to do a lot of charity work, and so that's kind of just expanded with the, you know, as the numbers have expanded of the group, we've really kind of expanded that charitable nature, and I think that's one of the reasons why you see us at so many conventions and other events. We work a lot with Lucasfilm directly, and that whole relationship was built based on the fact that we, to begin with, we're doing a lot of charitable things. Mm-hmm. And Lucas is one for, and he really likes doing things for different charities. And so that drew him to us, and therefore we have been able to have a relationship with Lucasfilm that's very coexistent, more so than probably any other fan group that's out
there. What charities is the 501st involved with?
We do a lot of stuff with Make-A-Wish. Locally, we do a lot of stuff with Child's Play. Today, we're doing the pictures, and we're taking donations for the Kent Children's Therapy Center, and which is great because they've got a corporate sponsor, which eludes me. But they've got a corporate sponsor who's going to match our donation. So that's going to be great. It's going to essentially double what we were able to make here at the con for them.
Awesome.
Outstanding.
Children's Hospital.
Yeah, Children's Hospital. We do stuff for them, toy drives and things like
much
that.
Much more charitable than the people that you're portraying.
Yeah, well, I mean,
come on, I'm charitable. Yeah, right price though.
We always, for the right price. You got to look at, you know, the movies were written by the rebels, so you know our image was written by the rebels.
We're just trying to bring peace and justice to the galaxy.
Trying to bring order out of chaos. Well, that's outstanding.
The history is written by the victors.
Guys, thank you so much. More information if people want to know more about the 501st.
If you want to know more about the 501st, it's 501st.com.
Okay.
If you're local in the Seattle area, it's garrisontitan.com.
Okay.
For more information about the
WhiteArmor.net,
and Jango Fett Bounty Hunter Detachment is thedentedhelmet.com also.
thedentedhelmet.com. Outstanding.
You guys are wearing out the belt.
Blowing up the belt.
Guys, thank you so much. Thanks for the work and always adding to the atmosphere of conventions. Have a great show.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Bubba. That was surreal.
I started laughing because I turned around and... as I turn around, I look, and there's Boba Fett sitting in a chair across from me.
It's like,
I couldn't help but laugh. It's like,
it's the Fett, man. And that'll take care of our first episode from the floor of the Emerald City Comic Con. And I'm back in Chicago as I'm recording this segment, so I can tell you with certainty that we have a lot more comic culture conversation, talks with creators, and stories from the convention and Seattle coming up in the next few days. So make sure to check back for those. And if your iPod is screaming out for more comic culture goodness, there's a couple of podcasts I want to tell you about. First of all, you should probably already know that Tom does a solo podcast called Tom versus the JLA. It is released daily throughout the week and is 10 to 15 minutes of funny and insightful commentary on the early stories of the JLA. And fans of Bullpen Bulletin should know that Vince B has decided to dust off the microphones, and he's convinced myself and David Price of Marvel Noise, and formerly of Bullpen Bulletins, to get together once a week and record a show called 11 O'Clock Comics. So you can check either one of those podcasts out at iTunes or your favorite podcatcher of choice. And the forum for 11 O'Clock Comics is at aroundcomics.com, so you can drop by and leave your thoughts on the show and converse with Vince and Dave and tons of other good comic book fans. So once again, we'll have more coming from the Emerald City Comic Con in the following days, but rest assured, between now and then, we'll be everywhere in and around comics. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
Record us talking about Magneto. Hey, how's it going?
Live from Seattle, you're listening to Around Comics.
the end of Saturday's
Around Comics.
We're here to announce that Around Comics has been acquired by iFanboy.com. Yeah. And we'd like to welcome Tom Caters, our new guy.
New Josh. What?
Seattle facts?
I already read some of them. Were you aware of the fact that Sir Mix-a-Lot is a notable resident or slash
is he notable?
From
not
is
anymore.
Sir Mix-a-Lot notable.
If that's the best you got, you're in trouble.
Okay, let's move on. Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah.
Another dude in a kilt.
At least that one's longer. The other one's was short.
And like schoolgirl.
Dangerously short.
Dangerously short. Like schoolgirl.
That's a utility kilt. That's a specifically.
That's like legs crossing is.
Utility kilt sort of like it doesn't make sense because it's supposed to be so you could work in it, but then it's the one place where you want protection.
It's like
you have none.
My dad owns a construction company. I'm pretty sure if somebody showed up wearing a utility kilt, he'd
be beaten to death.
With a wrench.
Like a belt loop's not going to do it.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Are you actually recording?
Yeah. Why not?
All right. That's fine.
For those who, this will probably never actually be aired, but the sadness of Saturday was a lot of us sitting at a table waiting for people to come and getting the Sunday brush off, and then just sort of...
Well, today could be, tomorrow could be nuts for you. Sunday could be...
Yeah, it's true. I'm not worried.
This is a small city.
Yes, isn't it?
The city has an approximate population of 600,000 in the metro area.
Yeah.
With the surrounding...
That many live in my neighborhood.
Surrounding is 4
million. Queens. Adidas pants were outlawed in Seattle in 19...
This just in. Adidas pants outlawed in New York City.
No one wants to hear this. I don't even know why I'm recording
No,
this.
I'll just do it anyway.
Stupid. Yeah.